drawing room over here.
Oh, hey, come on in. In 1962, Stanislaw Lem wrote his novel Solaris when space travel was in its infancy. Solaris offers the idea that we're not everything. As a human race, we need perspective. Writer David Gregg is the artistic director of the Royal Lyceum Theatre in Edinburgh and has adapted Solaris for the stage, and he joins me in the drawing room. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So what happened in 1961 that gave birth to this novel?
Oh, I see. Well, Stanislaw Lem is Polish. He was writing during the time of communism in Poland. And while he was writing his book, Yuri Gagarin went into space. He was the first person to go into space, to orbit the Earth. And that was an incredible moment in human history. I mean, for some people, you know, lived through it, it was an extraordinary step into the unknown. And one of the things that Lem, I think, becomes interested in is what perspective do you have when you look at the Earth from far away, so to speak, the idea that we are one planet. But the other thing that interested me, at least, is that Gagarin, when he came back, there was a sort of staged press conference that the Soviets put on, and a journalist asks him, so, Yuri, did you see God when you were up there? And Gagarin said, no, and I had a good look around. And I like that quote very much for many reasons, but I think it's in the back. Some of the wit almost of that quote is in the back of Stanislaw Lem, because although the films that got made about Solaris are awfully serious, and there is a deeply serious tone to it, there is also a mischief and a wit to this idea of a planet that is conscious, hanging in space with a space station full of humans orbiting it, trying to work out what it wants. Is it God? Is it a child? And I think Lem approaches that with a real cleverness and wit.
What were the Soviets looking to find when they sent him around the orbit?
Well, I think the Soviets wanted an enormous propaganda coup to show that, you know, all humans were united by technology and by the vision of communism, I suppose, vision of us all together. And again, that's something that, so the novel sets us on this space station with a small number of scientists. Obviously, they are from all around the world. It's a sort of imagined future. Although one of the joys of the book is that it's the future as imagined in 1961. So they have a library on board the ship with books, with paper books. They smoke cigarettes. They drink. They have files and filing cabinets and things on a spaceship. So I really love all of that. And we've kept all of that in our theatre adaptation as well. But yeah, I think there is a sense that space always makes us look at the Earth and suddenly go, oh my God, we're all sort of the same, aren't we? We're all very small, really, in the grand scheme of the universe. And that's, again, I think that's something which is a very attractive idea for us, but also sometimes quite a frightening idea.
So tell me about your adaptation then. There's the book. How does that look on stage?
Yeah, well, actually, although it's a science fiction book and it is, you know, it's set in space, it doesn't have any phasers on stun or, you know, any of the kind of paraphernalia of what we think of as sci-fi. You know, really, it's almost more, it's a little bit existential, but it's also a love story. I mean, essentially what happens is a woman who's a psychologist is sent to this space station that's orbiting the planet. The planet's covered in ocean, and they have reason to believe that the planet might be conscious, but they don't really have a way of communicating with it. And onto the space station start arriving visitors, which seem to be sent somehow by this planet. And these visitors are really manifestations of the memories of the people on board. And in the case of the psychologist who arrives, she encounters her former lover. Of course, it isn't her former lover. They're on a space station a million miles from Earth, but that's who it is, and he seems to know what she knows. So it sort of poses a really lovely philosophical question of what would you do if someone who you had loved and lost came back, but you kind of know it's not really them, but it's enough them to be very, very attractive, not just in terms of the love story, but also just in terms of the not feeling so alone. It's so anyway, yeah, I think I've tried to make it less about science fiction and a bit more about emotion.
And the human condition.
Yeah, it is very philosophical, but every time I say that, I just think about sort of people stroking their beards and going, interesting. And I just would want to say that it's a little bit more than that. But it is, yeah, it's got a lot of good questions in
it. Yeah, and if you want to stroke your beard, just go ahead.
Yeah, fine. I mean, yes, absolutely.
Being in space sounds incredibly lonely. How do you tell that story of loneliness on the stage?
Well, that's where Matthew Lutton, who's the artistic director of the Malthouse Theatre, where the show is on, he's also the director of the show. He has an enormous skill for atmosphere. He has done, in the past, he did Picnic at Hanging Rock. He also did Melancholia. And what he brings to the theatre in the form, using sound, using visuals, using images, and particularly incredible use of music, he really conjures atmosphere, and he creates on the stage an atmosphere where you do sense that although these people are together in some way, they're also very alone and in their own internal worlds.
So what's your own background? What's your own pathway into the theatre?
Well, I'm a writer by trade, a playwright, and have been. I think my first play went on in Scotland around about 1992 or somewhere about that. So I've been doing it for a while. But recently became the artistic director of the Royal Lyceum in Edinburgh, which is quite a big theatre, about 600 seats, quite old-fashioned proscenium arch. I've been look ever since I got the job. I've been looking for ways to collaborate, particularly internationally. And I knew Matt's work from seeing Hanging Rock and bringing it to our theatre. So we sort of hooked up together from that. But yeah, for me, the theatre started when I was a kid. It started when I was at youth theatre, and I found that I went along. I'd be quite a lonely kid talking about loneliness, and I didn't really know what my place in the world was, but I sort of went along to the youth theatre and I found all these people, these actors. I mean, we were all young, but I just found I really enjoyed the company of actors. When you were with actors, fun things happened. But unfortunately, I'm terrible at it. I can't do it. It was very immediately clear. I was really dreadful.
There wasn't any torturous path. You just realised quite early.
Yeah. Well, I thought I'm going to have to, if I'm going to carry on hanging around with these people, I'd better learn something that they need from me. And so that's where I went into writing.
Tell me more about this need or desire and now this execution of international collaborations. Why did you think this would be a good thing to do?
I think it's something very personal to me. All the way through my career, I've done international work. I did quite a lot of work in the Middle East as a writer. I worked with young writers across that region. I've also always had my work on internationally. I grew up, in fact, in Nigeria. I was what they call a third country kid. I didn't live in Scotland until I was about 12 years old. And I think possibly there's something in that's always made me feel slightly maybe dislocated or disconnected in some way from home. In my first play, a play called Europe, a character says, "I've never felt very at home at home." And I think there is an element where my writing often is powered by that kind of feeling of sort of both having ambivalence towards the idea of home. And so for me, it's the same with when I got the job in Edinburgh. I thought, well, we're an international city and I know we have this festival that everyone comes to, but what about the other 11 months of the year? Are we just some province? Are we just some tiny place? No, we have to go and make connections with people and find connections. And Melbourne immediately drew my mind, partly because I knew the city from my plays having been done here, but also the connections between Scotland and Australia are very deep. And also I think that sense that both Melbourne and Edinburgh are cities that have work in theatre in the English language but are not New York or London, and so have always got that sense of wanting to elbow their way in and say, hey, hey, we're here, you know, notice we have a perspective as well on the world, and it's not exactly the same as the London or the New York perspective. So it seemed fun to connect over those issues.
Do you think it's a similar perspective?
I think it's both completely different in some ways. Literally, you know, we're on other sides of the world. But I think everybody who isn't the centre has a slightly skewed perspective, and that is a similarity. There is a shared bond. I think it was the writer Milan Kundera who talked about the bond of the little guy, and he was talking about countries like Czechoslovakia and Estonia and, you know, against Germany and France and Britain, and in terms of culture, that there is a little bond of the people who are just slightly to the side. And I love that. For me, that always gives the most interesting perspective. I mean, I think, you know, Australian literature, theatre, poetry, cinema is attractive for precisely the reason that it isn't New York or London.
So back to your story or your stage performance of Solaris, how do you keep it, I mean, given, you know, when it was first written, how do you keep it up to date and relevant for a contemporary audience?
Well, I hope it's relevant because the story is sort of eternally relevant. I mean, it's a story really about contact. Contact between the living and the dead, contact between humans and aliens, contact also just between two humans, a man and a woman. And the thing about contact is that it's something we yearn for deeply. We're human, we're social creatures, but at the same time, it is the source of danger. I mean, that's where it's contact that causes you pain, it's contact that causes you trouble. And so that ambivalence towards contact is an eternal thing. And I guess my approach was to make it relevant by not making relevant. So in a sense, saying, let's forget the present day, let's not have computers, let's not have technology, let's not have mobile phones, anything like that. We'll go right back to the technology of sort of the 1960s, 70s. We'll, in a way, set the play in the past, even though it's on a space station. It's actually, we'll make it almost a period piece. And in doing so, that will give the audience a chance to find their own way into it.
So tell me about this planet Solaris.
Well, I love the planet Solaris. It's such a beautiful concept. It orbits, it's a planet covered in ocean that orbits two suns, which means it has a kind of figure of eight orbit. The figure of eight orbit ought to mean that it would be very unstable and eventually would crash into the sun. But in fact, it doesn't. It holds its orbit steady, which means that it must be, this is what the scientists work out, it must be kind of manipulating the tides, the weight of the tide, the water that covers this whole planet, to sort of hold itself steady. And it's that simple thing they realize that gives them this huge question. And there's a lovely bit, the book actually is a very funny thing, which I wasn't able to put in the play, a whole chapter of all the different theories about why this might be, ranging from, you know, some people said it was like Buddha, some people said its silence was because it was teaching us, you know, that we too should, you know, listen to the stillness. Other people thought it was a child, other people thought it was like a dumb animal. You know, I love the idea that this, all we know is that it's covered in ocean and that it appears to be able to, in some way, to control its destiny, and yet we don't know what it thinks. We know it's thinking, but we don't know what it thinks. In the film that Tarkovsky made of it in the 1970s, almost all the characters are men. It's a very sort of almost hallucinogenic film. And there was a very funny moment when I was watching it recently, and there are all these men are smoking and looking out at this thing going, what is it? What does it want? What does it want from us? And I sort of thought, oh God, it's like Solaris is a woman here. There's all these men looking going, what does this strange creature want? So I think the brilliant thing about Solaris is that Lem found in it a metaphor for all the things that we don't know, all the others, whether it's, you know, women or aliens or God or children, you know, anything that we're always thinking, what is it? What do they want? What are they thinking? That's it's quite a fun metaphor.
You mentioned you couldn't include, you know, that chapter with all the theories. Is that really difficult as a person kind of in charge of the direction of this thing to make those difficult decisions?
Well, that was a hard one because that really made me laugh. Mm. And most people, when they think, if they do know anything about Solaris, they don't tend to think of it as a bag full of funnies. But I did think, you know, well, that's a lovely surprise to discover that there's this humour, this wit, almost like Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. But in the end, you know, the stage is the stage and it's not a book, and this a book you can pick it up, you can put it down, but the stage requires movement through time and action, and you really need that feeling of driving forward. So whenever I had a character just start sort of saying, well, one interesting theory is this, you know, you could feel the stage just fall dead. So in the end, you know, it's got to go, and it is painful, but it's you know, the other side of it is you mustn't adapt a book unless you think in some way that you're going to do something, if not better, then at least significantly different than the original material. Otherwise, you're just wasting everybody's time. They should go and read the book. So I think things like that can sometimes be helpful because they tell you, okay, this is not what we're going to do. We have to do something else.
You mentioned the film as well and you recently watching it. How much does that guide the process as well?
There's actually three or four film iterations. The most famous is probably Tarkovsky's Russian version, which was a huge art house success, very much influenced the new wave of cinema through the 70s and 80s. Frankly, it's a bit of a slow watch. I mean, I like it, but
you have to have certain interests.
Yeah, you
style,
have to really be up for it. George Clooney and Steven Soderbergh did a really terrific version in around about 2002. A little bit more Hollywood, so much more watchable in terms of narrative, but perhaps lost some of the mystery that Tarkovsky had and that the novel, I think, has. And then I won't bore you, but there's also a Soviet television version. There's all various other versions I watched. So they did influence me in a way, but mostly I had to watch them and then the idea was to discard them and then say, actually, what's my version? And of course, we changed our central character in the original. Chris Kelvin is a man, and the former lover who comes back is a young woman. And so we changed that to Chris Kelvin is a woman and the former lover that comes back is a young man. We did that for a number of reasons, partly because there's otherwise would be hardly any women in the story, but also I think it was a way of saying, okay, once we do that, lots of other things are going to be different and that will make our story our own and force us to find our own way through it. So that was also a kind of way in for us.
David, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
David Gregg has been my guest, and his new show, Solaris, is on at the Malthouse Theatre in Melbourne until the 21st of July.